This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, let's talk about AI yet again, because we can now finally decode dreams and recreate images of faces people have seen, and everyone from, say, Facebook to Elon Musk, they want a piece of this mind-reading reality. This is because for decades, neuroscientists have been trying to decipher what people are thinking in their brain activity. And now, thanks to the explosion of artificial intelligence, we can decipher patterns in brain scans that previously just looked like, you know, one of those really fancy wallpapers or a screensaver that one will put on the desktop and stuff, right? Just lights emitting around.
No, I mean, this is a fantastic story. Mm. It's incredible to think that the images in our brain could simply be printed off on a computer. But I'll let you say more about that.
Well, yeah. So technically how it works and this is a brilliant article in New Scientist. And I think you probably, Matt, you want to dive deeper.
I'll do a full show on this for MSP in a few weeks.
Yeah. So what they're doing here is extremely incredible, because one, it looks like a hat that they just kind of, you know, it's an EEG hat that they put on instead of this very expensive equipment that you would go on, right? These MRI equipment,
MRI
right?
Machines, yeah.
So what it does is, instead of just reading the patterns, it actually understands what are these patterns mean. So for example, they did one of the tests and it was, you know, of a visual of you looking at a photograph and you're looking at a specific point of view in that photograph. Let's say, for example, I'm looking at a photo of Matt Armitage with a group of friends, which is surprising that he has friends anyways.
I'll get to that later.
And I'm solely focusing on just your face alone. And what that machine could do is it could actually tell this person is looking at a face, just from the brain waves, the scans that, you know, all these electrodes, things that your mind does.
Different parts of your brain light up with certain objects.
Yeah. And
so AI can be used to actually track those patterns. So in the same way that we can use AI to put any kind of data together on Google or whatever, we can do exactly the same with these patterns in the brain. It's not necessarily decoding the exact thought. It's not able to tell at this point what person you're thinking about, but it can tell you're looking at a face, and there are loads of categories.
But just even that, though, it's a fascinating that it could tell that you're kind of looking at a person of a face, because it's just electrodes that are being lighted up. It's completely encrypted if you think of it.
But that also goes back to that thing about, we think we're a lot more individual than we are. We don't think that we're a system, that we are a collection of data. So when you get something like AI that can analyze massive data sets, it starts to see the patterns and the correlations. That's why big data is such an interesting subject, even though to most people it's a really boring subject, because you start to see patterns that you didn't imagine. So for example, like analyzing the brain, you wouldn't necessarily think that all those flickers of light would indicate you're thinking about a person or a mug or a ship.
Yeah.
But the data processing tool can start to see those patterns.
Mm. The only issue with this test that I think one of the writers for New Scientist did here was that this helmet that he had to wear gets a lot of interference, especially just minor things, whether, you know, you're blinking or you're smiling, or, you know, just your gums are tightening it up. It kind of, you know, sort of interrupts the brain activity scan, so it's kind of messing it about.
Again, that's another thing that we forget, that every time we smile or blink, that's actually electricity that's pulsing through. And what these machines are measuring is electrical activity. So, of course, when you do something like that, when you swallow or when you blink or when you frown or you sigh, you're disrupting the way that it's reading those electrical signals. You're giving additional information. And in the same way that you don't put a microphone too close to a speaker because you get feedback, you're getting exactly the same in this instance.
Now I'm just a lot more conscious of, you know, whenever I blink or whenever I smile and swallow, I'm just thinking of like, ooh, there must be some really crazy patterns going around in the brainwave here. But one of the suggestions is that in the future, you could possibly embed this inside your brain itself. that's where I feel like, okay, guys, I see the need for this, but maybe that's one step too far.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why. I mean, no, you've hit it on the head. That's exactly why I want to do this as a full show, because I think the interesting angle is who owns your brain.
It's not about your data anymore.
No, exactly.
Forget about your data. Right. It's your brain.
Yeah, so who is going to own your brain? So that's why we'll talk about it more on another episode.
Yeah, because Facebook is also doing something along these lines for a very weird reason.
Which is why I come back to who owns your brain.
Because Facebook is trying to develop a brain kind of, you know, predictive AI technology thing that could help you to type as fast as you could think. Now, if anyone from Facebook listening to this is, generally you don't say it out loud when you're thinking about it. You do your own...
you don't want to say the things you think, right? That's possibly the worst idea.
And putting it on Facebook is possibly the second worst idea. Yeah. So you're combining these two things into one.
All I can say is they would need a lot more content centers, sensors, rather, if that became real.
That is just absolutely weird that Facebook actually wants to help you to type faster, because then you just have to think of it and it could go on Facebook. No, Facebook, I don't want my thoughts to be on Facebook.
But companies like Microsoft are also working on interfaces for this kind of thing as well, because I don't know how much time we've got left for this story. But there's also the element about how this can be used for people with disabilities. So people who are paralyzed, who don't have speech, or even people in with PVS, vegetative states, it can be used to contact them and allow them to communicate back with us, because early experiments with this kind of technology, just the more basic side, has shown that people with PVS, up to 20% of them are actually conscious to some point. And we have assumed that everyone is unconscious. Mm. And they have managed to talk to people who are in these states. Mm. So
I know there was one individual that we all, you know, highly respected. He was not under PVS. He was, you know, he was diagnosed with something else. Stephen Hawking, for example, right? Like, he couldn't really, you know, operate his body, but the mind was just completely powerful.
No, exactly. And for him, he had to still use physical sensor. So this kind of technology, you wonder how much more he would have been able to do in his life if he'd had a much faster interface. So there's a lot of potential downsides to this, but there's incredible potential here.
Yeah. Go and check out the article on New Scientist. If you're a subscriber of New Scientist, you'll get the full article. If not, you just wait for Matt Armitage to do a full show on this, because it's absolutely fascinating stuff. We have King of the Crowd, and then we'll have one more story about another AI platform. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu. Together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, it's King of the Crowd time. And this time around, I think, Matt, you have found a winner of the year. It's something so simple, but my God, I want this.
I know. I mean, we were talking about this off air just before, and we were both saying that we don't really understand why we like it, but it is really cool. And to be honest, when I first saw the headline for this in my emailer, I thought it was stupid, because what it said was mobile bicycle helmet. And I thought, what do you mean mobile bicycle helmet? They're all mobile. You put them on. They're portable. So I read the story thinking it was going to be another, oh my gosh. Mm. But it's not. This is the Park and Diamond collapsible bike helmet. It looks like an old-fashioned, like a 1970s Tour de France type bicycle cap.
Exactly
with
that.
With the large peak. Mm. What it is kind of a fabric-covered bike helmet that has lots and lots of cells. So it's much softer than a traditional helmet. So you can fold it up and put it in your bag. It makes it very, very light. It makes it very, very comfortable. It also makes it a lot cooler in the sense of not being hot. Because, I think you were telling me off air, you know, you cycle a lot, so you wear a helmet. Now, I hate wearing a helmet because my head gets too hot. Mm. So I get really annoyed, and I usually take it off after about 5 minutes.
It is very hot in there.
So something like this would help with grumpy people like me.
Without compromising safety, because it's not just a baseball cap that you're wearing.
No, and also you can because of the way it's structured, the team says that they will be coming up with a lot of different designs in the future as well, because you can put it into pretty much any kind of hat shape. So you can imagine somebody having more of a kind of bucket hat, so it'll give you some protection from the shade. You can imagine somebody having it in a Panama hat because that's just what they're like. you know, but you can start doing a lot more customization and, of course, that portability aspect, because a lot of people struggle with what to do with the helmet if you're going out to meetings and all this kind of stuff, or even if you're just wandering around. Being able to fold it up and store it in your bag is really important. And another thing that I like about this is the price.
Yeah.
Because it's priced really competitively. A lot of the things, when you see these ideas on crowdfunding, they're great ideas, but they're just ridiculously expensive, like pretty much everything we talk about. But this is really reasonable. So they're offering nearly a 50% discount for the early bird price. They should start delivery, I think, in March next year. But the price of this thing is, I think, $84 US plus shipping. So that comes out to around 300 ringgit.
Which is what you would pay for a good bike helmet.
Good bike helmet anyway. So one that is a lot more usable, a lot lighter, and still gives you all that kind of protection. I think that's a really, really good price for
it.
So that's the Park and Diamond collapsible bike helmet.
Go and check it out. Really nice. It's a baseball cap that you could actually use for a bicycle helmet and, you know, mobile bicycle helmet.
Or if you prefer a cycling helmet that you can use for baseball.
Yeah. Either one, yeah, why not, right? Let's talk another story about AI, because, you know, we've seen AI being able to, drive vehicles.
And we've just talked about it, reading your brain.
DeepMind, which is, you know, the company that Google owns, they've done wonderful stuff with AI, and they've came out with another brilliant use case for AI, and that is cheeseburgers.
Yes, they have used AI to make a cheeseburger. Not the cheeseburger itself, but to create a picture of a cheeseburger.
Why do we need an image of a cheeseburger? Yeah,
we don't need an image of a cheeseburger. But this is more as a kind of balance to the previous story, because the previous story makes AI sound, you know, really powerful. The reality of AI is that its focus is very, very narrow. So when we talk about things like DeepMind and we talk about the game Go, now it's world champion at Go. You change the dimensions of that board and it can't play anymore.
Yeah.
Not it's no longer a champion, but it simply can't play anymore. Yeah. It cannot function. So when we're talking about AI, giving it information to come up, you know, you or I could picture a cheeseburger, just like that. Mm-hmm. But for a machine to do that is incredibly complicated. So a couple of years ago, when they first started this test of being able to kind of visualize information, the image of a cheeseburger that DeepMind was able to come up with was blurry. It was out of focus. Yeah. It looked vaguely like a cheeseburger, but it looked, you know, it was a bit like... It's a bit like going to McDonald's. And
it's not an appetizing cheeseburger.
You see the cheeseburger on the menu and then you open your box. Right. So it's kind of like this. So now it can actually start to make the cheeseburger that you see in that picture. So I just kind of wanted to include this to show people those kind of limitations of AI. We tend to think of it as being incredibly powerful, that it can do all of these incredible things. But actually, in 2 years, it's only managed to go from blurry to out of focus in terms of visualizing a cheeseburger, which is something I'm doing right now, and I'm feeling quite hungry.
Now, how it works is it's a very simple idea at the basis level. It has one algorithm to try and generate an image, and then the other to tell if the image is a real picture or fake. Now, the second algorithm is acting as the guardrail, so the first algorithm eventually would learn what what a real cheeseburger or what a real fake cheeseburger would look like. So you could identify from there, and then it will just, you know, continuously produce better results. And at the end of the day, it's about scale. And DeepMind will build things more better with scale. It's all about data anyway. So.
But and again, that's the point. You know, for us to know what a cheeseburger is, we just have to look at one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we eat it and we know that is a cheeseburger.
Hungry now, man. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But for this kind of artificial intelligence, they need to look at thousands or even millions of cheeseburgers before they're able to decide what a cheeseburger is. Mm. So
I feel more powerful than AI all of a sudden.
Good. That's what we aim for on this show.
Let's go with Geek Tunes. What do we have for today's show?
Okay, now this song may confuse some people, but it's really lovely anyway, so I thought I'd include it. So Julia Holter is one of those artists who kind of defies categorization. Some of her stuff's folky, some of it's electronic. She kind of dips in and out of genres. I guess this next song, you could kind of look at it as being in the same kind of universe as Bjork. It's something along those lines. This is I Shall Love Too by Julia Holter.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.